Hey everybody, it's the Commodore from the Clan of the Grey Wolf, and you are watching the Weekly Ringer series here on clanofthegreywolf.com. Well, this week I've got to refresh the conversation around museums that we had from last week, which was awesome, by the way. Going to kind of wrap up that and talk about some of the things that you guys brought up about museums in the internet age. I'm going to then walk us into a question after I give you my own sentiments about that. I want to also bring in a question for next week, which I think you guys are really going to like, about one of the big trends at CES this year. Surprisingly enough, video gaming really was on prominent display at CES this year, which is something you don't normally see. And so I want to bring a little focus to that, talk about one of the, I think, the main trends of that's happening in CES. And I think it's going to be a question you guys are really going to enjoy. So, all right. Yes. So, good to be on time again this week, too. Good to be rocking the weekly video again for the Weekly Ringer the way it should be, as I talked about last week. I am also not sick this week, so that's also a wonderful thing. I like it when I don't have to struggle through talking to you guys because my voice just doesn't work, or it's kind of severely hampered like it was last week. It's always kind of strange to work your way, you know, putting a video out there when you just feel like you don't sound like yourself. So I sound like myself this week. Cooper has a real cat face. The Commodore has a real Commodore voice this week. And so we will continue on with the Weekly Ringer. Now, as I always do, I'd like to begin the show by welcoming some of our new commenters. As you guys know, the comments really keep the show going. I'm never disappointed. I think the comments are always fantastic with the show. It really keeps things moving, and it's what makes this show continue. It's the lifeblood of the show, as you guys all know. So, who do we got to welcome this week? This week, we've got to welcome Kaiser Knuckles. Interesting kind of combination of concepts there. Kaiser Knuckles, welcome to you. Thank you for being a part of the Weekly Ringer. And also, I'm going to go with what I would think would be the proper pronunciation here is Sit-Yo. Sit-Yo. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I can't figure it out. I'm not smart enough. But welcome to you as well, Sit-Yo. So both of you, thank you very much to the conversation. Welcome to the Weekly Ringer, and I hope to see your contributions moving forward as we have many Weekly Ringers to come. Okay, let's talk about last week. Last week I asked you guys a question coming off of my New Year's break, which was about museums. I asked you about what the role of museums really are in the internet age. Now, you know, there were a lot of perspectives that came out of this, and I think for the most part, everybody pretty much agreed on what kind of perspective they thought the museums, and what kind of role the museum should play in the internet age. And what I'm going to talk about kind of is the overall theme of the comments, because there really was just one overarching theme with everybody, and that was that the physical nature of museums is important. Now, we might have had differing opinions as to what the importance really was, and I'll get into that when I get into the comments, but the fact of the matter is that all of you pretty much agree that there is something important and different about having a physical collection of artifacts to be enjoyed than even something that the internet can provide, which is a series of facts, images, videos, archival footage, those kinds of things. That's a different kind of experience, and one that is valuable, but is different than a museum. And many of you, I think, or almost all of you, I would say, see a tremendous value with the museum continuing, even through the internet age and beyond, which is something I probably could have predicted, but I'm glad to see that everyone was pretty much in agreement. The other thing is, and this is part of that, so the physical nature leads itself to this point, which was echoed throughout, that instead of just a kind of a learning experience, which I think you can get pretty much anywhere, right? Go check up facts on Wikipedia, go read some online journals on JSTOR, whatever the case might be, right? You can gain knowledge. There's no question about this. You can gain a certain amount of knowledge by watching videos on the internet, by reading articles on the internet, so on and so forth, right? But one of the things a museum really offers is learning with experience at the same time. So there's a kind of experience of going to a museum. Now, I'm not going to say that there isn't an experience with reading something on the internet. There is an experience of that. And we become, as we spoke about 2 weeks ago, you become savvy in terms of processing that information experientially. But there is a different kind of experience. There is a linkage of learning, of a learning experience that happens between learning and experience that happens inside the museum that I think presents a unique combination that is a different learning experience altogether. That was a common theme that people brought up as well. So I think that all ties together. We're going to get into this. Now I want to get into the individual contributions from you guys to talk about what individually you look for as the role of museums in the internet age. All right. Sonic Rose was the first person to talk about the idea of a physical presence, the idea that that a museum has not just facts, not just figures, but also artifacts. It has real pieces of history that we enjoy and that we like. And I think once we, once you kind of see something in a museum, it feels just, in some ways, again, experientially different. Like, I've stood in front of this moon rock. I have stood in front of this T-Rex fossil. Got to see these skeletal remains of early humans, or these rare bugs from the continent of Africa. Whatever the case might be, right? The fact of the matter is, there's something very physical about being there and seeing something that's a little different than seeing the stock photo JPEGs on Wikipedia. I think it's going to be difficult to argue with that. DTX 180 talked about, creating better connections. And this goes to talk about the experience that's different in the museum. One of the things I think that really does or is highlighted by you guys very, very well. The idea is that when you read something, we all read Wikipedia every once in a while. Like for a couple weeks ago, I think Mr. Andy Creighton talked about the idea of, you start with one Wikipedia article, next thing you know, you've got 10 windows popped up because you're really interested in a particular topic and you want to learn as much as you can as quickly as you can. I think we've all done that. But I think those kinds of facts and those things that jump into our heads from those kinds of sources just as quickly kind of jump out of our minds, because there's not a kind of experiential tie to them. We don't have a lot of memories associated with when we go and click on a Wikipedia page and then go and read an article or take a couple facts into our minds. Meanwhile, in the museum, when we see something, when we can touch something, when we have a spectacle in front of us, it's something that is very much more tied to multiple vectors of memory at that point. It's not just a fact that you're trying to record, but a fact mixed with an experience, mixed with an artifact that kind of records itself in your mind. Now, I'm certainly not a neuroscientist, but I think it's indisputable that the more ways you can kind of memorize something, the longer it stays in your brain, the more imbued inside of you that it really becomes. The mnemonic devices of singing a song to words helps us remember those words, right? It's the same kind of thing. We have these kinds of artifacts that help us remind us of the experience of seeing them, as well as the facts and figures and whatever else that goes along with them, which, I think have a tendency to leave our heads much more easily otherwise. The other thing was DTX 180 brought up bringing the connection with periods as well. So the fact that we feel some kind of connection with a particular period in time. Maybe we didn't live in Victoria-era London, but we see artifacts from that particular point in time, or we see historical artifacts, or we see what people were studying from a scientific perspective at that particular point in time. And we feel some kind of linkage to those folks, as interesting and weird as that might sound. And I think there's a lot of validity there as well. That's something the museum definitely gives as a unique experience. The Bowtie Guy talked about really appreciating the level of detail. Now I think this really has much more to do with art museums generally, because we all have been to, or I think most of us have probably been to an art museum before. When you see a picture, an image of something in a JPEG, like something you buy, at a department store where, somebody's replicated a great work of art that you can now hang over your bed, right? that is fundamentally different than seeing the Mona Lisa at the Louvre, where you can actually see the real grooves and the kind of sweat and tears that went into creating this beautiful work of art. So much so that, again, it is different experientially. You see all of the nuance that goes into this piece, and it becomes something completely different than if you saw the beauty. I'm not saying you can't appreciate the beauty of the Mona Lisa from a JPEG. You can. You can appreciate Michelangelo's Pietà in pictures on the internet. You absolutely can. But to stand in front of it and to see all of the intricate detail and understand that this is something a human being created with their hands is just fundamentally different. And I find that to be so incredible and so different of an experience. And I think there is a spectacle involved here, guys. That's what I'm talking about. It is a spectacle. You go to the museum where something is hung on the wall that somebody tells you is very, very, very important. And here's why. So before you even go and look at something and know what it is, you go, man, this is important. Someone has deemed this to be something I need to know about or see. So there's already a reverence there. There's already a kind of commemoration of that, which I'll talk about in a minute. But there is a spectacle of having that on the wall, and we love that. So there you go. I think you guys are all onto something really cool here. Now, Mr. K told an interesting story about the University of Alabama, and I thought that was very, very good. But one of the things I want to talk about in terms of the overall philosophy that Mr. K presented is the idea that museums aren't going anywhere because in many ways they offer connections with the internet age and not conflict with the internet age. So one of the things that happens at the Smithsonian now, as you can see, one of the things I saw, which was actually a fairly old exhibit, was you could actually take your cell phone and you could call a phone number and then hit a button for where you were, and it would actually take you through an audio tour of a specific part of the museum. That's cool. But, you know, and I've seen this other places as well, you know, where you pick up an audio tour headset or whatever the case might be. But the idea of a kind of augmented reality for a museum is something that a lot of people are taking very, very seriously. The Louvre is starting to offer this, as a matter of fact. You actually can take a device, go through the Louvre, and it will actually, you know, as you move the device over, it'll give you facts about what you're looking at, which I think is indispensable. Completely changes the experience of the museum. And as many mentioned, the actual blip of information that sits underneath what you're looking at kind of becomes secondary at that point. You know, at that point, you can actually look at what you're looking at, and instead of taking it over with all this text, if you want to read as much as you want to about that, you've got the resources available. It's right there in electronic form. It's right there connected. But if you just want to look at something and appreciate it, you can do that too. And so I think Mr. K has really stumbled onto something here, which I think is perfect. And that is that if you take a museum and you combine that with the internet sources and the unique way that the internet propagates information, you come up with a really cool formula for the way that people learn and process information. And I think that's a great point. I think that is probably the best argument I've heard for how a museum can continue to really thrive in the 21st century and in the internet age, as the question I asked, because it just makes sense to me. If you bring all those, the best of both of those things together, you find some really awesome alchemy that happens there. Speaking of the kind of way we experience stuff, I think Have a Corn Dog brought up a really interesting idea, and that is that there is a commemoration. In other words, museums in many ways are about making connections with people, not just making connections with artifacts. Although making connections with artifacts is something else that happens. But, for example, we had DTX 180 talking about the idea that we actually find a way to link ourselves. We find an experiential link between us and an object, us and a period of time, us and the different people that are long gone that otherwise could not be tapped to even discuss these kinds of things and couldn't do so if we wanted to other than in their writings. So what the museum offers us in many ways is the same thing that a monument does in many ways. So think about when you last saw a monument or some kind of commemorative piece, right? It's designed to pay tribute to someone probably from a bygone era, or the greatness of someone that was here, right? Commemorative, as in we collectively remember something, right? This idea is exactly what the museum does. It is a spectacle. It's larger than life. But it's also something that helps us create a linkage between us and other people. And I thought that was a particularly good insight. You know, there is a great... What museums allow us to do is make connections with people that are long gone. It helps us make connections with eras that are long gone, even where there were no humans, right? When was the last time you felt, I think, that dinosaurs were as real as they could be, more than standing in front of a fossil? I just don't think there is. As much as, you know, watching Jurassic Park is great, and there have been so many movies that have had so many realistic monsters, and you can go see that in IMAX 3D. You can even see documentaries created for IMAX 3D while you're there at the museum in many cases now. But there's nothing like standing in front of one of those giant fossils. This is real. This is huge. This is amazing. What would this be like 65 million years ago if I'm standing in front of this monster? And I think that creates a connection between us and these things that are so far gone. But more than that, the other thing that Havikornadar was talking about is that it allows us to have collective memory. Not just that we connect to the object itself, but that together. So the Smithsonian is the National Museum of the United States of America. Therefore, it is in many ways bringing together the best projection of the country in one place, right? The idea that we as a country remember these things as being important. It's why the Holocaust Museum was so cool while I was there this time. You actually get to see why Americans, specifically as an American, I love the idea that I get to go see that there is this American commemoration of something that was so important for us to remember. That's important, folks. I'm not going to sit here and wave some kind of nationalist flag. I'm not interested in that. What I'm saying is that it becomes important. You understand what's important to people and to a collective people for a particular reason, right? I've been to the State Museum of Texas, for example. It's a wonderful place because they remember things of what Texans would feel important and what is important to Texans. I'm not a Texan, but I've seen it and I know I appreciate that fact. It's different than anything that I've ever seen. So I really like that idea. I think it's great. Akira VGA brought up a really cool point, which is brought up at every single museum and every commemorative, I think pretty much every commemorative monument I've ever seen. And that is that it's there also to inspire future generations to take up the flag, whatever that flag might be. Could be a particular political cause, for example. Could be to study science, right? I mean, I remember being so interested in the Air and Space Museum as a child. And thinking to myself, man, this would be amazing. It helps you to dream big. It inspires you to have really, really big dreams. And I think how many astronauts, that have gone into space with NASA were inspired by the moon landing or the Apollo missions or, even before that, just orbiting the Earth or the idea from Galileo that the stars... that we are not at the center of the universe and that there are so many things to explore and see and the vastness of space. These kinds of things are inspirational. And I think museums are there to inspire us as well. And that is one of the reasons why they want to continue to bring people in. So the role of the museum is to inspire people to want to do other things. And as much as you see those kind of internet commercials now, like, all the ISPs in this country, they're all trying to say, oh yeah, look, this inspires wonder in our children. It's like, come on, it inspires wonder is just as much as it allows them to play Call of Duty, right? But a museum is not like that. A museum isn't all about allowing people to play Call of Duty. The museum is specifically there to inspire people to do great things. And I think that's awesome. Something bigger than ourselves. Again, with the collaboration. Sit Yo, again, one of our first time commenters, brought up a great idea, and I can't believe we're talking about this in the Weekly Ringer, but how awesome is this? The concept of the sublime. I thought this was a fantastic idea, because specifically, when you get into art, it is a little unique. It's different. It's different in as much as we have a collective kind of appreciation for art, right? But in as much as we look at something and it is beautiful and it is nuanced and it is unique and it is maybe even one of a kind, right? But still the creation of humanity, forgetting about science museums and things like that for a moment, there is the notion of the sublime in that. You see something, and it's touching. It's emotional, and I think that is incredible. That objects created by human beings can inspire that kind of feeling in us, and I think this has more to do with what it means to intrinsically be human than almost anything we've talked about here today. Maybe except commemoration, which the sublime kind of relies on that as well, because we have a collective memory as a culture. We have, even kind of a collective memory, as a race of people in terms of humanity in general. We have an evolutionary memory, as it were, and we see the history of what humanity has created artistically, from cave paintings all the way to, you know, grave sites or things like this, where there is kind of this concept of the sublime that I think is a beautiful thing. And it, remember, folks, it's not the sublime is not necessarily about perfection or the creation of the perfection of form, or it is about, I think, the appreciation of beauty in something that inspires it. It is about the recognition in something that gives it a very powerful meaning to humanity. And if a museum doesn't speak to those kinds of things, then I think it's probably not really a very good museum. So with that, I'll wrap it up. I'll wrap up the comments from you guys. It's clear, right? Museums still continue to have a role in the 21st century, in the internet age. There's no question about that. But at the same time, it's also, I think, changing and evolving. And just like technology evolves and changes, museums are going to have to change and evolve in order to kind of facilitate the kind of learning that our children have now and that people have as adults. I mean, as an adult, I have a tremendous appreciation for the Smithsonian that it's not that I lacked before necessarily, because I always loved it, but it's different. It's strange. It's changing. You know, it's like going to Disney World when you're a kid versus going to Disney World as an adult. You see the same thing, but you see it through a completely different kind of lens. And that, I think, speaks intrinsically to the notion of museums. It's a part of what a museum really should be. So I don't think they're going anywhere. I think the role is to be that tangible, experiential place to go where we commemorate great achievements in culture, science, and learning, and it changes and evolves over time. And one of the things I love about it is that it kind of dispels mythology, the popular myth, those kinds of things. And the fact that that happens, I think, for me is fantastic. I love to see knowledge and experience come together in really cool and lively ways, which is exactly what a museum should do, in my opinion. All right. So great conversation, by the way, folks. I am, of course, always, always impressed by the real level of conversation we have here in the Weekly Ringer. You know, I mean, I don't take a ton of credit for that, but it just warms my heart to see you guys commenting in what is, I think, a very intelligent way, by the way, on the internet, because there's a lot of crap out there, right? But we talk about things here that I think are very worthy of conversation in great ways, and that is a credit and a testament to you guys. All right. Enough patting you all on the back. It's time to move on to the next topic of conversation for next week. So what I wanted to do, I did want to ask a couple questions about CES, and I wanted to do it when I was in full voice and could actually really talk about it. So interesting to CES this year was that there was gaming kind of hijacked part of the show. Does not normally happen. Normally, you know, gaming news comes out at E3, and if not exclusively at E3, it comes out at PAX or something like that, where we learn about a new console, we learn about a new technology or a new game or whatever the case might be. Well, this year's CES, in true surprise fashion, not a way that anybody had predicted, really stole the show in terms of gaming. you know, there were a lot of really interesting gaming entrants this year. I won't run through all of them because I want to talk about a couple of them. But instead of doing that kind of as a CES roundup or something, what I want to do is ask you guys a question for next week. So I don't know how many of you really followed CES, but one of the things that really came about as a complete surprise, no one saw this coming, was the NVIDIA Shield, Project Shield. And for those of you that haven't seen it, you should go take a look at it. It's an interesting concept, but essentially it is a console shaped like a controller with then a 5-something-inch screen attached to it as well that is powered by NVIDIA innards. By that I mean a Tegra 4 processor, which is supposedly the fastest mobile processor on the market today. And basically, this thing offers the power of playing any Android games you would possibly want to use on it, which is probably a waste of its processing power, all the way up to actually being able to stream your PC-based games to your mobile handheld device. Interesting concept, right? So you have NVIDIA, who has never produced a console before, ever, to my knowledge. They've only been a PC gaming, and even then only a peripheral company. They don't even make PCs. But they've decided to get into the hardware business full-time to the point of actually creating a console. Now, supposedly, this thing is actually going to launch fairly soon. It's very robust, and in the age of leaks and internet rumors, it's amazing that they've been able to keep it this secret this long. But what it does is it shows, I think, a trend that was brought up at CES this year, not just with NVIDIA Shield, but with a couple different manufacturers. And I want to ask you about that this week for this week's Weekly Ringer. So the question for next week will go something like this. What do you think of the single unified console? So what do I mean by that? What I mean is, NVIDIA and other companies, including Nintendo, at least that's the rumor, are taking a look at what it means to be a console, what it means to be a dedicated mobile gaming platform, what it means to be a casual gaming platform, and what it takes to be a kind of hybrid entertainment system / gaming platform within the home. And they're kind of the trend to me, it looks like, kind of smushing everything into a unified platform where, and the Vita is kind of a precursor to what Project Shield really offers, which is that it is a, in its own right, very, very powerful system that will play all the casual and mobile games you would want it to play. But it also packs a huge punch to be able to play all the games you've ever wanted on your PC. And oh, by the way, all you have to do is hook it up to your TV via a HDMI cable, an HDMI cable, or, you know, for smart TVs, you can actually stream to them, right? So what you have, essentially, is one handheld console that is your home entertainment system that you can actually dock to run as your you know, music, movies, all that other kind of thing, but also will play very, very powerful AAA titles right from your PC, and will also be a completely independent mobile gaming console as well. So my question to you guys is, what do you think about all this? You know, do you think this is the trend, and why or why not? What kind of benefits do you see that holding? What kind of benefits do you think we would forego to take on this kind of a platform? And I think the Wii U has a lot to say about this. I think the Project Shield has a lot to say about this. And the nature of streaming to devices like a Steam Box have a lot to say about this. So I want to see what you guys really think about it. I think it's a great a topic of conversation. I'm sure you'll all enjoy it. I'm sure you'll knock it out of the park just like you do every week. So in any case, to wrap up, thank you very much for watching this week. I think it was a wonderful conversation as always. Thank you for being a part of our little community here. Thank you for commenting and keeping the show going. This has been the Weekly Ringer. I am the Commodore from the Clan of the Grey Wolf, and there is no reset button.